Welcome in to a new edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast, part three of our four-part series ranking the futures of the NBA with Locked On Nets Marcus Barrahall. That's coming up next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is all rebound, back up, off the glass, it's good! RJ brings the Knicks to the
run! What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam across the lane, Knox foul from behind, got it, and one to Trier. Trier drives down.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw. Once again, joined by Marcus Barrahall of Locked On Nets. We are about to get into it. The middle tier of the NBA. That means going over teams like the Rockets, the Thunder, the Grizzlies. I don't want to spoil anymore. But yeah, just kind of your teams that are in very good position, but not quite the elite. So we debate those. I think there's some really intriguing conversations in here because it says a lot about how we build team building and whether you value having one star long term, a lot of flexibility like the Thunder have in terms of future assets, a destination like Miami that can attract free agents and also has a very good base. Or just the overall organizational infrastructure and strength of a team like the Toronto Raptors. So we debate all that and more. And without further ado, let's bring him on, Marcus Barrahall, Locked On Nets, to continue our conversation of which teams have the best future in the NBA.
I should clarify. I did not mean that the Pacers should be above the Nets. Nets definitely should be above the Pacers. I more meant like that the Pacers were lumped in that group with like Phoenix and Atlanta right below them.
That's insulting.
It's like I just thought that the tier should have cut off after them as opposed to.
You're saying a one team tier.
I think they belong in the tier right above them.
Oh, you think? Well, I guess.
Like I think they're last in this next tier, but I think that they belong in it.
I will disagree with you, and I will disagree with me. I think after. They should be in their own one. I think it's a one team tier scenario because I think every team above, I would say, either has the capacity to legitimately compete for a title in the next years, not fake compete for a title, actually compete for a title, or are on the road to do that in four or five seasons, kind of like the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I credit to you. I think they're properly rated here.
Okay, all right, and then, all right, moving forward, we have the Nets, then the Rockets, and then maybe we get into a new territory with Oklahoma City at 13 and Memphis at 12, where those are clearly, like, such different scenarios. The Nets and Houston, the Nets obviously massively accelerating their timeline by acquiring Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. This offseason, Houston has been in win-now mode for four or five seasons. They're now extremely in win-now mode after giving up all their draft picks forever for Robert Covington and Russell Westbrook, and the fact that James Harden will likely never be a better player than he is right now. Maybe he was even better last season than he is this season. If you go into the stats, there's that. Honestly, they support that. So that's sort of where I'm at with those two. And then Oklahoma City has the greatest future draft pick situation of maybe any team in NBA history. I guess you could make the argument what the Celtics had with the Nets was a little better, just given that the Nets sucked and the Clippers are very, very good. But they basically have an extra pick every year for the next decade, and a lot of those years have two, with the acquisition from the Rockets and a pretty good base roster to begin with. And then I had Memphis slightly ahead of them just because of the young talent that's there. But how do you parse through all of that, Marcus Barrahall?
I think the Nets, and my bias is probably showing, the Nets should be higher. I think Memphis should be lower. OKC, Houston's kind of a toss-up for me, but I'll start with the Nets. Like you mentioned, they've got KD coming back. They've got Kyrie coming back. There's been a lot of trade rumors and discussion about what's going to happen in the offseason in terms of trading one of either Dinwiddie or LeVert, along with maybe Jared Allen and maybe a pick or two. They have their own pick this year. Or actually, they will not have it because they're going to make the playoffs probably. But they'll have Philly's pick this year, which should be around the 20th pick. So they could make some kind of package to try to get a third guy to play alongside KD and Kyrie. There's been rumors of like Aaron Gordon being that type of guy. I think Bradley Beal before his extension was probably still too good of a guy to get for those kinds of guys. But I think that they definitely want to get another guy in there to pair with, or to whatever the three version of pair is with Kyrie and KD. So if they do that and those guys come back, even if KD is only like 90% of what he was, I think Kyrie should be back, basically to what he was before. It's a shoulder thing that he's out with. So it's not anything, hopefully that'll be long term. If those guys can all come back and can gel and they can get a third guy, like this is a team that can absolutely compete for a title next year and can be, one of the top two teams in the East alongside, Milwaukee. And they should be able to compete for the next couple of years, with that core. So I think they definitely, just because of like how close they are, should be higher than a couple of these other teams. Houston, we talked about them a little bit earlier. I definitely like what they're doing, and I think it was the right move given the roster once they made the Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook trade. I just don't think it'll work against specifically a team like the Clippers. I think pretty much everyone else they'll have a decent shot against, but yeah, I think if they wind up playing the Clippers or even the Lakers in the second round, I think that's kind of it for them. OKC I like more than Memphis because I think they have similar amounts of young talent. I'm a big SGA guy. excuse me, but I think that they, like you mentioned, they have way more picks. So I would put them ahead. I don't think either of those teams is necessarily head and shoulders above the other in terms of talent. And I think that OKC's pick situation should push them ahead of Memphis.
Yeah, that's reasonable. I guess the reason I'm in love with Memphis, and I like Morant maybe a little bit more than SGA, even though they're the same age. And it's close. I think they're both longtime all-stars, but I just his athletic ability is just crazy. And maybe you could argue that makes his game less sustainable than SGA, but yeah, I'm a Morant believer. And just aesthetically, I like him a little more. And then I think just the combination of him and Jaren Jackson Jr. is like, as much as I was hyping up Mitchell Robinson, like Jackson is about as good as you can get for an archetype for a modern center, a guy who can shoot threes, is simultaneously an athletic rim runner, a rim protector on the other end, is expanding other aspects of his game. Just those two together, it's almost, I mean, this is blasphemous because they're both like top 30 players all time or top 40 players all time, but it's almost the modern Stockton and Malone in terms of how you would build those guys and build that type of pairing in 2020. I think Brandon Clark is underrated. Like I think that guy, like maybe not a star, but could be really, really good and sort of like maybe even a better version of a Montrezl Harrell coming off their bench. And then even someone like Dylan Brooks looks like a very good wing potentially for a long time. Like just everything about what they're doing and how good their coaching has been this year, even though I couldn't tell you the name of their coach, Taylor something or other.
Taylor Jenkins.
Yeah. He's on the Woj podcast.
Yeah, Taylor Jenkins.
Yeah. Cousin of former Eagles quarterback, Malcolm Jenkins. Don't check that. But yeah, I like that combo. And Oklahoma City, you're probably right because the pick total is just crazy. My only thing with them is like, is there anyone on that team? Maybe my guy, Lou Dort, former Sun Devil, but outside of SGA, you really like is like a young dude. Like I just think they sort of have one great piece and then a whole lot of potential, but there really is a scenario where the Clippers are consistently picking in the 20s every year. And maybe look like you have extra picks, like the odds go up pretty dramatically. You strike gold in that spot and you get someone like a Pascal Siakam, but that's just so far from a guarantee. I almost prefer the fact that I think Memphis has two stars locked into arguably the two most important spots on the floor.
Yeah, and the Thunder picks, though, they aren't just from the Clippers. They've also got a Denver pick. They've got Miami. They've got Houston. They've got picks, like, from
that's a lot.
A bunch of different spots. And so, like, if any of those teams flames out, yeah, that'll be a great pick for the Thunder. But I think your point about the depth of young talent in Memphis is a good one. They've also got guys like Dylan Brooks. Like there are a lot of like capable young players there. And for the Thunder, it's more so guys who aren't like old, but guys who aren't like young either, like Schroeder, like Gallinari, Steven Adams. Those guys I think will be good for the next few years for sure. But yeah, they've kind of reached a point where they're not necessarily going to get much better than they are right now also.
Yeah, and if they get something for Chris Paul, maybe that even further changes the equation, because you could talk about a scenario where you you package, like, the Knicks are interested in Chris Paul, and I don't think the Knicks would do this because I'm sure they'd consider him untouchable, but if they really wanted to, they could say, hey, you guys love Chris Paul, we'll give you Chris Paul, we'll throw in like 4 first round picks, just give us RJ Barrett. He can't shoot. What's the big deal? And I don't think the Knicks would do that just because of what the inevitable backlash would be. But I could see some scenario where James Dolan is like, oh, people are so obsessed with Masai Ujiri, look how many first round picks I can get. And they just do something really dumb. last comment on the Nets. My fear with them, and you know, so I want you to respond on this, is just defensively, mm-hmm. I really don't like where they're going to be a season from now, unless they pretty dramatically restructure the roster. They just feel like sort of, as someone who is Charmin soft on a basketball court, they feel like Charmin soft across the board, outside of Durant, and I think Durant, like, odds are he loses a little bit of the top-end athletic ability we saw throughout his Oklahoma City career and again in Golden State. And he's maybe, he goes from, like, an A defender to, like, a-minus, B-plus defender. And I think that drop-off could be significant given what they have around him, and, like, Kyrie's just going to be disinterested forever and the rest of the guys on that team. And, again, I think that there's certainly a scenario where that team looks dramatically different a year from now, and maybe I'm not giving enough credit to the fact that Sean Marks has proven to be one of the 10 or so best GMs in all of basketball, but that's sort of what worries me about them. I don't think, despite having the star power, they're as good as the sum of their parts, or as good as they should be given the talent on that roster. Again, a year from now, obviously not this season.
Yeah, it's been weird watching the Nets defense this season, because there's been runs where it's like multiple games in a row where they look tremendous defensively. You've got guys like Garrett Temple off the bench who defend really well. Torian Prince, when he's engaged, can defend solidly. Caris LeVert, same thing. And Dinwiddie, too. Like, they have a lot of guys who, like, when they lock in, they play really good defense. Jared Allen in certain matchups has been really good. Same with DeAndre Jordan in certain matchups. Like, they all kind of, like, have a high ceiling defensively, but more often than not aren't reaching it. And you saw that if you watched the Nets-Hawks game recently, when they just got absolutely destroyed defensively. So definitely adding KD would help, assuming he's in decent health. Kyrie, I think, has good hands defensively and can hold his own in one-on-one matchups. He'll definitely, like, drift when he's off ball for sure. I don't think defense will be a huge concern for this team in the playoffs, just because they have guys who, like, when the moment is there, they do lock in and they do have the ability to harass guys defensively. I think that, like, game to game, it'll definitely, like, go in and out, especially, like, on the focus aspect of defense. But I kind of believe in this team long term defensively.
All right. You swayed me a couple of ways. I think I'd move the Nets ahead of the Rockets, though. Part of that is honestly just watching that Clippers game a night ago, because I sort of thought Houston might have low-key been the best team in the NBA, and the Clippers dissuaded me of that. And OKC, Memphis, I'll mull a little bit. All right. A quick non-podcast interjection. I think this will probably take, like, maybe 25 to 30 minutes to finish up. Would you rather go play basketball and finish it later, or are you down to just finish and then go
out? No,
after?
Let's just finish.
Okay, cool. All right. 3, 2, 1. All right, and let's get into another tier. I have my next, I'll say the next 4 teams belong in the same tier. The extremely talented and semi-dysfunctional Al Horford-ridden Philadelphia 76ers, Denver, who has Nikola Jokic, but I don't really trust them, Miami, who does not have the same amount of talent as, really, you can go back to maybe the Pacers until you have a team with, like, I would say, like, the current star power and, like, the future asset combination that, like, they should objectively be about 16. But I love the infrastructure they have there. I love the culture, and I think they are a great candidate to get a star free agent. And then the Raptors, who are just operating on as high a level as any organization that we've seen, I think, since the Spurs a decade ago. I'm pretty comfortable slotting them in at 8. What do you make of that glorious foursome?
Yeah, the Philly thing is crazy. That, like, I don't necessarily disagree with them being where they are in the rankings, but just considering that they have, like, Simmons and Embiid, like,
yeah.
I would think that they should be much higher. And maybe they should swap with Miami in these rankings, but I think what you said about Miami is true, that they've definitely built, like, a real culture there, and with like a few minor exceptions, like pretty much everyone who goes there plays better. Jimmy Butler seems like very happy playing there, and they've got young talent. They've got guys like Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn, Bam Adebayo. Like they've got a young group, and they've also got like a Jimmy Butler, Iguodala, like older group also. So they're kind of doing what the Celtics tried to do a couple years ago, where you have almost like two teams in one, which definitely makes me believe in like the long-term sustainability, where like maybe once Jimmy Butler kind of ages out, maybe it's not like a seamless transition to like the Bam Adebayo generation. Maybe there's like a year or so in between, but I think they're definitely built for like success now and success later. So no problems with them there. Denver's interesting too, because it seems like they've been a trade away for a few years now, and they made a trade, but not really one that was like super impactful. I think Michael Porter Jr.'s health will be huge in terms of like what their upside winds up being. Gary Harris has looked not good this season, and I think they wanted him to be good. You know, I would assume that. So that's not good. Jamal Murray still kind of a little bit inconsistent, but I do kind of trust him at least to handle the ball in big moments in playoff games. But yeah, they have Jokic, but I don't know if his game translates super well to the playoffs. Like he had a great series against Portland and like against the Spurs last year, but just having like a center as your best player is kind of, it worries me a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's hard to build around. He's so unique, and that's his greatest strength, but it's also really hard to build around. And again, in my small ball apocalypse future, I this is also something I was talking about last podcast. I think there's a scenario where someone like Jokic it's interesting how like a few years ago we saw a world where Enes Kanter couldn't survive in competitive basketball situations. And I really want to get Denver, Houston in the playoffs because I want to see how Nikola Jokic does in that scenario. And I think offensively he's a total monster, and maybe he's averaging 40 points per game. But is it a situation where you end up trading twos for threes and that doesn't work long term? That really interests me. Quick tangent. How do you feel about the Bam Adebayo generation as a band name?
That's pretty good. That's
pretty good, right? Can you see that on a t-shirt and just like a big of like Bam with like platinum blonde like flowing hair like screaming into a microphone? I don't know.
I just, you could put it on a tote bag and it's like Bam Adebayo generation BAG bag. You know?
Oh wow. That's really good. I'm going to delete this from the podcast. Go to the patent office with a mask on and just get it done. Yeah, Philly. If you just like took Al Horford off this roster, I think I would have them maybe up to six. I think that contract was such a fucking disaster. I think it really, I agree with what Max Kellerman went on Woj's podcast and he's look, like Philly had like three or four titles won, and they blew it with the way they've handled all this. Like, you go back to, like, obviously this is revisionist history, and, like, I don't know if anyone would have done it at the time, but they just take Tatum with what Tatum is now. Like, that's, like, Simmons, Tatum, and Embiid, that's the next 10 years of NBA basketball, and it's pretty analogous, I think, to what Oklahoma City had, and in some ways even better because of the two-way potential of those guys. You could argue all three of those guys are top two or three positional defenders at their respective spots in the NBA. And like, I don't think anyone would have beaten them. But even with blowing that, there were so many configurations of this roster that could have been really great. I think they probably should have kept Robert Covington with what we see, what he's doing in Houston now. And at the time, like trading for Jimmy Butler was the right move. But then if they got him, like, I wouldn't have minded if they ran back last season's team. I know there's some debate over whether or not they actually offered Butler the max versus Butler just insisting that he wanted to go to Miami, which clearly has worked out beautifully for him. And Butler and Brett Brown had some issues, but that team was really good. They were better than Toronto when Embiid was on the court, and he was sick for a lot of that series. Granted, I guess Embiid's health should always factor into this equation, but there's a real case to be made that was the best team in the NBA after Golden State's injuries last year, and they couldn't keep that team together, and instead they signed Al Horford in this sort of misguided attempt to stop Giannis. And I mean, I'll come out and say it. I totally bought in. I thought it was brilliant. I'm like, okay, they're going to shut down Giannis. They have the weapons to beat Milwaukee. And the rest of this roster is just going to be overwhelmingly dominant defensively. And none of that has come into play. They, I think, have some real injury concerns down the road between Simmons and Embiid. I think those two can be great together, but they obviously don't optimize each other. And then the rest of the roster is just sort of fine. It's good, like Milton and Korkmaz go off every couple of games, but there isn't that one young piece there outside of those guys because they traded away Landry Shamet, who, frankly, I wouldn't straight up take over Tobias Harris, but at their respective contracts, like I would sort of rather have Shamet and the Miami pick and the other pick that they had versus having Tobias Harris on this team. And maybe that's too much of a dissident. Like he's had a good season, but I think they've totally blown what was sort of the best future in the NBA. And maybe I'm punishing them too much by having them at 11. Like I think looking at it again, they should maybe be ahead of Denver, but I don't know. I don't love their future, honestly.
Yeah. When you mentioned Tatum, I was just thinking about like a fantasy world where they took Tatum, they kept Butler, and they had a lineup of like Butler, Simmons, Tatum, Thybulle, and Embiid. Just like how incredible that would be defensively.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about them is like I feel like they don't put any of their best players in the best position to succeed. Like they cramp Embiid's spacing by giving him Simmons, and same thing vice versa for Ben, and then for Tobias Harris. Like they make him kind of like a secondary playmaker. They give him like the ball on post-ups when there's like two guys like also in the paint. Like I think he's played well in his role, but I don't think it's like necessarily maximized what he can do. Josh Richardson has been kind of in and out of the lineup this year. I kind of want a little bit more from him offensively and taking some of the playmaking. But like at the end of the day, it comes down to the fact that like Simmons can't shoot, Embiid can barely shoot, and like those two guys are so good that you need to have them on the floor. But if you have two guys on the floor who either can't shoot or are like not good shooters, like you're not going to be like one of the best teams in the NBA. Like you'll be very good. You'll win a lot of regular season games. You're not going to be one of the like teams that makes the finals. And they have so much talent that they were almost able to do it anyway last year. But like we saw it with Houston, like they had to trade Capella because they couldn't play him and Westbrook together, basically. And I think that was the right move. And I think I've kind of thought for a long time that, like, you can make Simmons and Embiid work together. But at this point, like, it seems like maybe they don't get better when a guy's out of the lineup, but they don't really miss a step either when one of those two guys is out.
This is going to sound like a hot take, but I think it's right. They would be better this year with Nicolo Melli on the roster versus Al Horford. They would just be better. Because the thing is, like, people don't realize how much of an amplifying effect shooting has. And it's great. Like, I mean, I think this is like a case that Elton Brand or maybe people who work for him, like, maybe shouldn't be a general manager. Maybe he got that job a little bit too quickly. And like, I hate to say that because I honestly like the ambition of what he tried to do last year with Butler and Harris, but it was Al Horford. Like, I thought it was so clear in Boston that he's sort of like a fake floor spacer. And Zach Lowe's points out time and time again, the range where he's comfortable are long twos. And like, if you have, and that's fine. If they had a point guard who was a really high level shooter, or if you just like you hypothetically swapped out Simmons for Bradley Beal, like maybe that works. And maybe the spacing around Embiid works, but with their current infrastructure, the idea that you could bring in Horford and that would all fit together in retrospect, I mean, again, I was buying into it at the time, was nuts. And they would be better off with just sort of like your stretch four. I legitimately think that would make them quite a bit of a better team. And I guess, I mean, yeah, I'm saying all this and you can ask why you still have them so high, because I think Simmons and Embiid at their best are top 10 players in the NBA, 26 and under. And the fact is those guys as assets, you still have that final pivot where you decide to trade one of them, and maybe it's Simmons for Brad Beal in a straight up type of trade, and all of a sudden you still have one of the better infrastructures and one of the better 1-2 combos in the entire NBA if you actually gave Embiid a talent of that caliber who also complimented him.
Yeah, and speaking of Melly, like his teammate JJ Redick, they let him go too. Like they kind of get rid of all their shooters. They got rid of Redick, they traded Shamet, they traded Dario Saric, a stretch big. Like they got rid of all of the guys on the team who could shoot, and they kept the ones who couldn't, kind of.
Yeah. No,
weird move.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So then Denver, I think I just want to clarify, the reason I have them at 10 is because I love Michael Porter Jr. And I think you're talking about 1-2s going forward, like the combination of him and Jokic. I think that's a borderline, like, if I could just have two guys like that. And again, the health issues are real. Some of the stylistic concerns going forward in the league are real for Jokic, but Jokic was for real last year in the playoffs. Like, as much as you were just talking about how, like, you gotta say Portland at the end of the day, they made the conference finals. Like, Jokic was outstanding in that series. So I'm a big believer in him. I'm a big believer in Porter. Miami, I made the case for. Let's move forward. Another team that's sort of in their own tier, I'm going to say Toronto, and I think to me this is sort of a case of organizational stability and what they've built. You can make a case Nick Nurse is one of the 3 to 5 best coaches in the league, which would have sounded crazy a year ago when there were still some questions about him, but I really believe that, and his adaptability is impressive and maybe a product of his relative inexperience, but it's really, really exciting. And then their roster just has a little bit of everything, and it doesn't necessarily have the assets or the sheer star power of a Philly or an Oklahoma City for the assets portion of it, but I like every part of that team. They keep finding young guys who are good, like Matt Thomas seems like he might be decent, Terrence Davis. I'm just like, these are just guys on the back end of the roster that, like, just seem like NBA players, and you put that around a guy who I think is a credible star. I don't think Pascal Siakam's ever, like, a top 6 guy in the league, but if he's somewhere between 15 and 7, and you have a great infrastructure rotating around him, it almost reminds me of what the Spurs had going post Duncan and Ginobili being in their primes, where they built around Kawhi for that one season, and I do think that's kind of a sustainable model with maybe a little bit less upside, just in the sense that Siakam I don't think is quite Kawhi, but I think they're going to be really good for a long time.
Yeah, they've got a whole, like, roster of guys who, like, could win Most Improved Player of the Year. Like, Fred VanVleet has taken a huge leap this year. Siakam, like, could honestly win it again this year. And yeah, they've kind of done similar to what I mentioned with Miami and Boston a couple years ago, where they've got, like, multiple teams in one. Like, they've got the Lowry, Ibaka, Gasol group, and they've had a lot of injuries this year, so, like, they haven't had everyone at once, kind of, but they've got that group, and they've got the VanVleet, Siakam, OG Anunoby, who's been really good this year, like, Chris Boucher out of nowhere has been really good. Like, they have a ton of guys, and yeah, they are kind of just like a rich man's version of Miami, Indiana, like that type of team. Like, this is kind of like the best version of what those teams can be, unless those teams like Miami get like another star in there. I am still a little bit worried about them in the playoffs. I think Siakam, as great as he is, and he's literally probably my favorite player in the league, I don't trust him down the stretch to hit a big free throw, like that kind of moment. I still don't trust him. And I think VanVleet, I actually do trust to be that guy. So maybe it just becomes that VanVleet is, like, more so the closer down the stretch of games, and Siakam kind of, like, keeps them in at the first 3.5 quarters. Maybe that's the recipe, but there is part of me that, like, just still is like, they can't be this good. Like, this can't be for real without Kawhi, you know?
Yeah, I think, and now I think that that's a real point, and it's one of those situations where it's like, all right, let's see how it translates to the playoffs. And I think it's also an oft-made point, but teams who play hard for full games every game in the regular season have a little bit less upside in the postseason when everyone is doing that. And I think that's not something I came up with. That's something Zach Lowe says a lot. That's something a lot of really smart NBA guys say a lot. I think it's applicable to Toronto. I think their upside is curbed a little bit by that fact, and the fact that they, after the first round, they probably won't have the best player in most of their series. You just can't help but commend them on what they did last season in terms of the overall roster. And just the fact that, I mean, it sort of struck a chord with me when you were talking about VanVleet being that guy who could close in the playoffs, because I was thinking, oh, I mean, that's sort of who Lowry was for them a year ago, especially in that last game against Golden State. And it's just amazing that they built this team last year that was good enough to win a title, while simultaneously they had understudies for their two best players. Like, VanVleet was like Lowry reincarnate. I don't know if he's going to be quite as good as Lowry, but a lot of the same qualities. And Siakam was sort of Kawhi-lite, and they just kind of have that next man up where those guys can do that down the road, and it's this self-sustaining system that, again, is just very, very similar to what we saw from the Spurs.
All right, that is it for this one. Good way to finish up the conversation. So the remaining 7 teams in some order, I am not listing them in the order we put them in. Golden State, Milwaukee, the Clippers, the Lakers, Dallas, New Orleans, and Boston. So we rank those teams in some way If you want to find out how we rank them, you're going to have to tune in to find out. All that and more next time on Locked On Knicks.